party have to, under magical rules, tell you what they're going to do before they do it. But they can't tell you in a way that makes it obvious, because then you'll do something about it. So they have to tell you. So here was your warning. This was 1991, 10 years before it happened, and it tells you, caution, 9/11. We're going to look at some more in case you think that's just chance. On the left-hand side, we've got Gremlins 2, 1990, and on the right-hand side, The Simpsons, 1997. So if you look at the radio mics, one radio station is Radio 9, the other station is Radio 11. If you look at Lisa Simpson, she's telling you it's $9 to go on a coach tour around New York. Okay, that's actually telling you what's going to happen. Here we go, is another one. A Problem Child, 1990, 9/11, circled it for you just in case you missed it. And then Independence Day, 1996, when he's got the countdown, 9 minutes and 11 seconds. Okay, well, what else can we learn? If we think that Arnold Schwarzenegger's very much in with them, what can we learn? David, one more, please. Have a look at this picture. It's going to come round, that's okay. It's a bit dark on here, I'm afraid, but have a look at this picture. You would have to be involved with the Illuminati to know that the sign on the mudguard is an Illuminati symbol. Okay? And we'd expect at a party to see such a sign on a door, which means I can go and have free sex. There'll be a woman in there for me. So that's what that symbol means. Okay? If you look at the car, the tyre is complete, and yet it seems to be pretty rough fire there, doesn't there? Look at that picture very carefully, very quickly. I don't want to spoil any 9/11 talks, but we have to do it because it's part of the Illuminati. Here we go. Picture from 9/11. It's a police vehicle. Notice that the front, where it's been burnt, is just at the engine block and is highly rusted. Here's another picture. Coca-Cola van. The engine block at the front is highly burnt, incredibly rusted. Look at the picture that's coming round. That's a fire, yet that car that Arnold Schwarzenegger is looking at is completely rusted. Here's your clue. It's your Illuminati clue. Alright, was thermite used or something else or both? Big, big arguments raging at the moment and have been for a number of months. Whether the Twin Towers were destroyed with thermite explosive or something else. And this picture shows very, very clearly ejections of material from the right-hand side and the centre, which show you absolutely without question that charges were used. However, belt and braces job. If I want to bring a building down, I'll use everything to make sure I bring it down. Let's talk about space-based weapons for a minute. This is a real pin badge. It's not one that's been made up. This is worn by the military. Air Force Space Command. Why does the Air Force have a space command? Gary McKinnon, the guy who was nearly extricated to America, was on the trail of this. He wanted to know why the United States Air Force had a space command. And he was deliberately looking into that when he hacked into the Pentagon and nearly cost him his life. Not just his sanity, his life. This is not a trick photograph, this is a real photograph of a United States aircraft, and on the front is a laser device. That is an aeroplane that can fire a laser beam. Possibly not around the globe, but within a few miles. Here is a military patch. If we get time, we're running out of time, if we get time we're going to look at these. Here's a military patch worn by the military showing Space-Based Warfare Center. Okay, alien experiences. Okay, terminology. Extraterrestrial, to me, means an alien creature that spent a number of years in space, travelled from a planet and has arrived here. I have no problem with that. Extra-dimensional entities. These are another form of creature which don't travel hundreds and hundreds of years or hundreds of thousands of trillions of miles. They walk through a portal and can appear from another dimension. Interdimensional entities, those creatures that live between the third and the fourth dimension, such as a djinn. There's a djinn. Interdimensional entity. These are the ones that the Illuminati Dark Masters can conjure up. So djinns can actually be conjured up. You need an iron ring to conjure them up. We won't go into that, we just don't have the time. What time do we finish, Doug? Have we? Well, I can keep going. Right. If you do any research on it, you're told that if you have to conjure a jinn, you need an iron ring. That's bullshit. Jinn will only respond to a person whose bloodline goes right back through to Egyptian, Sumerian, whatever times. The ring is purely and simply so that the entity feels it's not bowing down to humanity. Okay? It's rather like the British prisoners in the Japanese war camp, and it's a true story. The captain licked a postage stamp of the Queen. You must have heard the story. Stuck it under the commandant's table, and every time he went into this Japanese colonel's office, he was forced to bend down. But he survived and kept his mind because he said, "I'm bending down to the Queen," because he'd stuck a postage stamp on. It's exactly the same thing. Jinn will only serve mankind or humankind if that person has that link back through the generations. But the entity will say, "I'm serving the ring." Jinn and the Illuminati hand in glove. Abduction, obviously taken without your conscious agreement. Contact, someone comes as a jolly old chat with you. I don't feel I fall into either of those two categories. I certainly am not abducted because I have a clear memory of agreeing to let them do it. Contact case, the best one I would think would be Alex Collier. It's where he gets taken and they give him news and advice and chat to him. But mine's not as happy as that. So mine's somewhere in between those two. How are people taken? I'm often asked that. People can be physically taken. Your body, one minute your body's there, one minute it's not. For every 10 times I'm taken, maybe only once is a physical take. It's extremely difficult for them to do that. You can be detected, or they can be detected, things can go wrong, and it requires an awful amount of energy. The better way is to take your soul or your energetic signature. For those people who have practiced astral traveling, your energy can be taken, your body can still survive for a limited period of time. If we accept that a lot of these entities don't breathe oxygen, why should they breathe oxygen? If we assume they don't breathe oxygen, they can't take you physically into their environment, but they can take you energetically. Some of the greys don't breathe at all. They are just automated bodies, don't need to breathe anything. So what are you? What makes you you? Are you really a physical being in a physical world? And all I'd ask you to do is just think for a moment that your physical bodies are not the be-all and end-all. In the Eastern religions, they actually are far closer to it than we are. We've forgotten about reincarnation. We've forgotten about the soul coming out and going around. To us, it's mixed in with goblins, ogres, and fairies. And I can assure you that's not the case. Okay, lies, lies, and more damn lies. Well, the Illuminati need to lie to you. This is brilliant. I worked this out myself. I'm very proud of it, because when I checked the National Geographic website, we only disagreed by 30 seconds. Here we go. All right, the official building of the pyramids. Apparently, this is the official line. 36,000 people were actually dragging the stones to the pyramid. 10,000 people were actually quarrying the stone. So that's a total of 46,000 people in total. The Egyptian government very clearly said these were not slaves. They were artisans. There are 2.3 million blocks in the Great Pyramid. 2.3 million blocks. Each block weighs 2.5 tons. In actual fact, some of the granite blocks weigh from 8 to 15 tons, but we'll just have that. 2.3 million individual blocks, and each block weighing 2.5 tons. It took, according to official figures, 20 years to build. Well, we can do the maths, can't we? Shall we do the maths? Right, 20 years divided by 2.3 million blocks means 115,000 blocks had to be cut, transported, and laid every year. Right? There are 365 days in the year. So let's assume they worked every day, no days off. That's 115,000 blocks divided by 365. which means that 315 blocks had to be cut from the quarry, transported from the quarry, and laid a day. Well, we can do even better than this. Let's make them work 17-hour day. All right, no breaks, no lunch, nothing. So, assuming a 17-hour day, 5 a.m. in the morning until 10 p.m., 315 blocks divided by 17 means 18.5 blocks had to be laid per hour. Right, do even better than this. There are 60 minutes in 1 hour. 60 minutes divided by 18.5 blocks mean that one block had to be laid in the pyramid every 3 minutes and 2 seconds for 20 years. It is impossible. It can't be done. And if you look on the National Geographic website, they actually say 2.5 minutes. They're actually 30 seconds tougher than I am. How could it be done? And yet, the thing is, people don't question it, because if I was an Egyptologist, the greatest thing in my life would be to go and work in the Cairo Museum, to be allowed to dig around there. And if I come up with anything that is contrary to the official line, I will never be allowed to do that. And that's why Egyptologists know this is all bullshit, but they go along with it because they've got a pension at the end of the day. Right, Draconis Reptilians, the R word. My drawing, I'm a small boy, and I say to this creature, "Hello, Daddy." The reason I call him Daddy is because he's told me I am your daddy. And he says to me, "You who call me father." And he says, "Yep, you're my son, I made you." We'll talk about that in a bit. I just say, "Are you happy?" And he says, "I'm pleased." Well, I bumped into this artist. He's in America. His name is David Chase, and he's like a forensic artist. And it was took 3 months to get this next rendition up. I'm going to show you the drawing. He would send me a drawing of a claw, and I would say, "No, it's not the right shape," but go back. Then he might send me a picture of an arm, and I said, "No, it's not right." In the end, we did it, and we both got copyright on this. I'm very, very grateful to David Chase for this. This is the White King, and this is a rendition of him. Those are not spines as such. They are residual wings. They're probably too big. But when you're a small boy and you see these things, they seem to sort of dominate in your mind. No tummy button. I don't have tummy buttons. And no visible groin area. Five fingers. I'm not going to tell you too much about it because I have to protect myself. Often people come up to me and say, "Oh, I've seen the reptiles." And I'll say, "How well have you seen them?" And they might say, "Well, you know, I've get along with them and I've seen them for years." And I might ask them a few questions. Because if they can't come back with the answers that I think are right, then I just treat them with a little bit of caution. One of the big questions I ask people who profess to see these creatures is, how do they walk? How do they walk? And if you really have seen these creatures, you will know how they walk. And they don't walk like humans. All right, mission patches. In Britain, Boy Scouts, Girl Guides, that's about it. We have badges and stuff like that. The Americans, absolutely mad keen. Every service man and service woman will have a badge. The Apollo, it's the official Apollo 11 badge. The eagle has landed. Hence, the eagle has landed. Here's, we saw that picture of the airborne laser. This is in space. And it shows a snake firing a laser beam at a missile. That's not what I want to show you. I want to talk about the snake. Why have they chosen the snake? Okay, mission patch number one, snake. I've got these, and I'm going to show them to you when we have a break. I brought them with me. Why have we got a dragon holding the earth? Why have we got three snakes around the earth? And in Latin it says, never before, never again. Never has the earth been free, never will it be free again. You have to make sure the earth is free, actually. This one is a dragon and a snake with the earth, and omni vestri substructio means all your underground bases belong to us. That's what it says. All your underground bases belong to us. And for those of you who know what underground bases are, interesting, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 stars, and the 6th star means Area 51. So we can't say Area 51, but they'll always donate it with, donate it with stars. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Area 51. So we know exactly where this special operations group are based. And as I say, there's a snake and a dragon there. Why have we got Uncle Sam, that's the eagle, with one hand holding the earth and one hand holding the snake? What it's saying is the reptiles, the snake and the earth are one. And very interesting, if you can take a look at Uncle Sam's stars and stripes, there are only two states. Can you see? Two stars. One is the United States and one is everybody else. New World Order. Two governments. America and everybody else. Interesting that. NRO, National Reconnaissance Office. Here's one. This is a photo rendition of one. Couldn't get the original one. And this is a wizard. Five stars and something coming out in the middle one. On the right, that says, get back if you're not initiated. The one on the left was changed. It says, the original one, which I've got, is classified flight test. These are all official. They have to be passed by the American government. And then they realized they shouldn't have done that. They've changed it now. And it now says, to serve mankind. The Latin underneath, and to upset you, but the Latin underneath translates loosely as, tastes like chicken. What tastes like chicken? Us or them? So you've got a grey alien. If grey aliens don't exist, why is there an official mission patch with an alien, a grey alien on it? Unbelievable. Okay, it's one of my drawings that I've done. I want you to look at the sword. I showed this about 2 years ago at a conference, and somebody said, I've got something you might be interested in. I had to drive down the M1 from where I live and meet this guy. And he didn't want any money for it. He gave it to me. So this is the White King with his white sword. And this is what I was given. The official line here is that the White Knight is attacking the dragon. That's rubbish. Because in Illuminati alien parlance, to place your hand on the head of anything means you're mine. We are one. Not attacking it at all. And what we've got here is a white sword and a white king. And you've got one V in Roman numerals. Area 51. Five stars. So we have Area 51, we have the white king, the white reptile with his white sword and a big dragon. The symbology is incredible. And on the right hand side it says silence and vengeance. Don't talk. White king, white sword. Here was another one I was given. Snake, white snake, red eyes, white sword. Why would you have a snake as your symbol? Why do snakes and dragons come up time and time and time again? Okay, you may be familiar with these pictures. They're evidence, that's why I always show them. On the left-hand side, that's me. Before initiation into a reptilian ceremony, on the right-hand side, a complete changed boy. In fact, so changed that I said to my mother, I wanted my hair the other way. And I'm afraid I'm a very arrogant, self-opinionated. There's about 6 months between the two here. And at that stage in my life, I was very superior, very arrogant, because I'd been around creatures which were far superior to anything else. And when you're a small boy, you tend to copy what you see. This is one of the creatures that I saw. He has the truly sacred standard, which is appears to be a metal pole. It has emblems on it which relate to what we call the wings from home. The lightning bolts at the side relate to the White Queen and her daughters, the king on the top. It's all symbolic. And the reptile holding the pole has a double white sash. White is the sacred colour. And if you look at his mouth, they have to project mentally and physically imagery. And he has to project a face full of thunder. That's the best I can translate it into English. So he has to pull that face. You never smile at these ceremonies because these creatures can't smile. So let's have a look at my wedding. In 1965, as a five-year-old boy, I was asked to go to a wedding and be a page boy. To cut the long story short, To me, it was a ceremony. It is a ceremony, but I didn't see it as a church ceremony. I saw it as a ceremony with the reptiles, and that's why next to the two bridesmaids, I don't smile, because you don't smile when you're with them and you're in a ceremony. It caused a huge amount of consternation because the page boy wouldn't smile. In my mind, I outranked these two. You think about it. You go in the church. There's the bride. I hold the bride's train. The most important person there is the bride. I must be second most important in my mind because I am behind her. Behind me are the bridesmaids. So in my mind, I outrank these two. So when they ask me to smile, I don't. However, the bride in the middle asks me to smile, and I then go into some form of confusion because you're not supposed to smile at these ceremonies, but she outranks me, and she's asked me to smile. And the tall bridesmaid on the left is basically saying, thank God, in the ears, that at last he's smiling, because the cameraman was doing his nut because it wasn't smiling. So I got a half smile. My reward for being a page boy was to go to Butlins in 1965. My mother came up to me with a camera and said, smile. I can't smile. So I do that, because that's what I've seen others doing. Okay? The one on the right you've seen, the one on the left you haven't. They both share the earth surrounded by a grid. It's called an energy grid. Please don't confuse this with the natural ley lines, the natural energy that runs through the earth. This is a grid that traps people. Okay, I'm going to perhaps talk about things that you have not come across. If you don't agree with me or you find it's too bizarre, that's fine. Let's not have an argument about it. Imagine that your physical bodies are not the be-all and end-all. Imagine what really counts is what's inside you, your soul, your energy, what makes you you. I know it's very difficult for humans to let go when a loved one dies. We go back on a regular basis and we put flowers at the graveside, or if someone tragically died on the road, we go and put flowers down. Humans can't let go. You live in a physical world. You can't see it, you can't touch it, you can't smell it, it can't be real, you can't believe it. You guys are different because you're searching for the truth. But the vast majority of humans cannot see that because if it's not physical. But just imagine that something inside you is more important. And when your physical body dies, this inside you tries to go back to source. You can call it heaven if you want. But an energy grid around the planet prevents that going back to source, and you're forced back into another body. So you are eternally trapped for millennia. Those of you who have seen and can remember that wonderful film, The Matrix, they don't propose that you're all sitting in pods, dreaming, and your static electricity or natural electricity is being drained. But what I am saying to you is that you are prisoners on this planet. And this is an official badge on the left, and he's a knight, which is the Knights Templar, the Illuminati, standing there, and he's defenders of the domain. The earth is the domain, and you aren't coming out. On the right-hand side, the one I showed you, shows again the earth with the energy grids around it. This is the real battle. I'll give you my email address, and if you want to talk more about it, then that's fine. Right. I have to talk about this because it's really important for me. Very first memories, in my cot, two strange hands coming down to pick me up. You won't be familiar with this, you've have seen this on YouTube, I'll fly through it. But it's my first one. Can't remember his body, just been picked up as a small boy, looking into his eyes. And that was the moment that contact was made, basically. My 1971 experience, which Dave Hodrin was very, very supportive and very helpful. In fact, it was Dave who said to me, draw everything down. And In those days, I was drawing it down to help me to remember. I never dreamt that I would be standing in front of an audience actually showing these drawings. That's why they don't come out so well, because they're just done with pencil. I never assumed it, and I remember one person saying, well, do them again in black pen. But no, that would be wrong. That would be copying. This is the ones I did at the time, and these ones, you know, need to stay. So even if they're a bit difficult sometimes to see and the writing's crap, that's for me is a history, and they need to stay. I saw this craft with five other children, 1971, for about 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, something like that. And then as soon as it disappeared over the horizon, then a red biplane with three enormous cameras on it, at literally treetop level. And I always remember hearing the propellers, looking at this wonderful red aeroplane, the pilot with a flying cap and goggles. And I saw it come over. You know, at that time I had no memory of it over my head. I had no memory of it flying after. All I can remember is being taken up, and a school. There's a school up there. Incredible. And the next thing I know, I'm sort of talking with all the girls from the two houses, and we're walking back, and I said, what do you think that was? And they said, oh, it's a shooting star. And I thought, well, no, it wasn't. I said, well, what about the red aeroplane? Nobody saw the red aeroplane. And so what about the schools up there? Nobody saw the school up there. The only person who took it seriously was my mother. And just like Dave Hodrin, my mother said to me, draw it all down and I'll show the people I work with. So I drew, courage to draw my drawings that I remember at that time. And then she showed them. She was the only one, she's just very matter-of-fact about it. Yeah, draw it, that's what you saw. The other group of girls, their dad was a strict Catholic, and it was terrible for him, he couldn't cope with it. The other family were Greek, and they just sort of laughed it off. But my mother said to me, well, yeah, that's what you saw. And what I saw was a room, very much like an open-plan office. That's a window, it looks like a domino. There's the windows behind. Set series of tables. And the table second from the right has children about 5 years old. All the children there are female. I was the only boy. And those children have just been taken from the earth, and as a result of which they have to be deprogrammed from the education they've received. So they have crayons and paper, because that's what they're used to. When they make a transformation, I don't understand what that would be, they move to the table to the right, where they then wear these things around their necks, which they call PEDS. PEDS. Personal Educator Device. Now, listen, we've got laptops and iPods. It doesn't seem amazing, but in 1971, I'd never seen anything like this. And they all wear them, or wore them, with, like, I don't know what it was, a chain or a thread around their neck. And I said to this girl here, who came up to me immediately I arrived, and she said, I'm to wait with you till you're going to be collected. And I said, why are they wearing these things around their necks? And she said, because they're children, and they'll lose them if they don't. And I said, what do they do? And she said to me, they teach us. And I said, what do they teach us? And the reply was, everything. Twice during the conversation, she told me off for speaking with my mouth. Use your mind. And what she said to me was, you can use hand gestures to reinforce something, providing you're speaking with your mind. But you mustn't use your mouth. So that was basically a school. And the guy that a researcher might refer to now as a Nordic, he was clearly the class teacher, and all I can remember, his face looked like he'd taken flour and put flour on his face. It was so white, and his eyes were blue, and his hair was parted down the middle, and it was long. He was very kind, very gentle, very angelic. And each table had a female, which I think was human, a helper. And as a boy, I would have been, 11 and a half, I call this the school in the air, because I imagined it was just off the ground. But later when I was chatting to Mary Rodwell, a researcher in Australia, and she'd had many counts of children saying this, she said, no, that's a school in space. But I had no feeling. You don't get in a lift, you can always feel it moving. I had no feeling of movement at all there. I just thought we were just above the trees. Okay, so this is the most sacred moment for me. The girl says to me, he's coming for you now. And she walks off, and this being walks along, and I become hysterical because I suddenly realize I'm alone. Nobody takes any notice of me. He just comes straight up, puts his two hands on my shoulder and says what it says there. Would you like to be like us, to have knowledge and understanding, to see the future and know the past, to have power and that word that's missed out is authority. And I did actually shout out with my mouth. I was so excited that I said yes, because I really did want to know about the past and I wanted to know about the future. Now, researchers refer to this as a soul agreement. In other words, I agreed to let them abduct me. But then it's not abduction, because I've agreed to it. Mind you, with these things, give them an inch and they'll take a mile. I didn't say they could do this, that and the other, but clearly that agreement, they feel they can. I couldn't stand here today if they'd hurt me. If they'd hurt me, I'd have to be a very, very brave person to stand here and tell you that. They've only ever treated me well. And as a result of that, it's easier for me to talk to you like this. For every one person who stands in front of you and says that they're having a happy time, there will be 30, 40 people who are not having a happy time. So let's be under no illusion here. For some reason, I am not harmed. I know I'm not harmed because when I come back, I'm not like that. Because they could give you a false impression in your mind and make you think you've been on a desert island and had a lovely time. But your body doesn't lie. Because if you're standing there and you're sweating and you're shaking, then something's very wrong. I don't have that. So I'm not having a hard time. One of the things that I do, I'm taking up a tall metal pole, I don't know how high this thing is, and there are hundreds and hundreds of creatures which I now would call hybrids, drawn up around. At the time, I didn't know what the word hybrid was, and all I said to the creature was, look at all those creatures down there, because they weren't human. And he holds my arm and he pulls it up so high, I'm actually pulled up and I'm on tiptoe, because these things are quite tall. They're quite tall, so I'm pulled up like that. And then they all raise their hands in salute. Do you remember the drawing I showed you of the shadow being with the hands up? Seems to be a theme with them. This was 1971 still. I was away for 2 days, and I was away for 2 days because I had to sleep. This is what appears to be a control room. I don't think it's a control room. I call it the decision-making deck. The decision-making deck was purely a test. And I was sat in that chair and subjected to quite a range of interesting things. And I had to make decisions. And this was one of the times when, the only time in fact, where I can remember humans being present. Five humans, one woman, four men, all in white coats, in the right-hand side, operating what I would consider very old-fashioned machines. Machines with tape spools going round, cables on the floor as thick as your leg. The machines were so, the hot heat, you could feel them, there were fans going. And then this side of the room, completely different technology. No switches, no lights, no nuts and bolts, completely different. I would say to you that if you looked at this side of the room, everything appeared to have grown. Literally grown out of the floor. There wasn't like we put furniture around. And at the end of it, I am physically lifted up and held in the air. Mary Rodwell had a case in Australia with a young boy. His parents were very, very distressed, and he reported the same thing. So with my permission, she showed my YouTube video to this woman, and I was able, through Mary Rodwell, to assist the parents to understand that their 7-year-old boy was not insane. Here was a 50-year-old man, lost Australia, 3,000 miles away, I don't know, never been to Australia in my life, never met this 7-year-old boy, yet he was describing exactly the same creatures doing exactly the same thing to him. So I was able to use my experiences to actually help a family in Australia, and I'm very, very pleased to be able to do that. Okay, anybody seen this picture before? My birthday card. Few of you. Okay. sending round the original card, and inside is a photograph of me at the same time so that you can see that's me. Okay, a couple of years back now, a couple of Christmases, we had a new shop called Card Factory opened in Whitby. And Whitby is a very small town of 12,000 people. So when a new shop opens, you know about it. And my wife said to me, let's go and get some cheap wrapping paper for next Christmas because there are going to be some discounts. So I went down in January. I hate busy shops. I hate lots of crowds of people. I really don't do that. So she was rummaging around, getting what she wanted. And I stood in the corner, found a nice, quiet place like that, next to a carousel. And I looked to my left, and I saw that in the carousel. Are you allowed to swear here or not? Right. And I picked it up, and I looked at it, and I said to my wife, What am I doing on a birthday card? And she said, what? Because she was pissed. I said, what the fuck am I doing on a birthday card? So she looked at it and she just, I don't know. So I was so shocked. I took the card, I went up to the woman and paid for it. And she said, don't you want your envelope? And I said, no. I said, that's me on there and I'm not happy about it. So she looked, I said, oh yeah, it's you. I said, yeah, but I'm not happy about that. I don't know about that. And I went home for 3 hours. I just sat. I'm not usually lost for words. 2 or 3 hours just sat in my chair at home, looking at this card, thinking, what am I going to do? I've got no memory of this. So, right, I need to go and see my solicitor, Mr. Jeffries, at North Yorkshire Law. So I went down to see Mr. Jeffries at North Yorkshire Law, my solicitor. And he said, oh, you've got a tough one here, because this is intellectual property. There are only 3 solicitors in England who can deal with this. 3. One in Newcastle, and the other 2 where you would expect in London. He said, but I tell you what, he said, this is England, and the laws are quite strict. So you'll actually gain more. He said, I know I'm losing money for the profession, but you'll actually gain more if you talk directly to the managing directors of these firms, because the law in England on this is very strict. Fine. So I got hold of the managing director of Card Factory. He's the managing director of the company that owned those shops where the cards were in. And I said, look here, I've got this card. I'm on it. I've got no recollection of this, you know, what's going on? So he said, well, hang on a minute, I'll just check this out, because we've bought the photograph from somebody else. As good as his word, 20 minutes later, he found me back home and said, okay, we have bought this. It's come from another company called Paperhouse. Here's the phone number for the managing director for Paperhouse. Phoned the manager up a paper house, and he said, same thing, okay, give me 20 minutes, phoned me back and said, oh, I've bought this picture from America. So I said, well, where's it come from? And he said, well, it's from a company based in America called Photo Library. He said, they hold the copyright for all of the cards in England. Nearly all of the cards in England are held in America. He said, they're based in Seattle. Right, okay. 5-hour difference between, or 6 hours between England and Seattle. Emailed them, very unhelpful. First thing he said to me was, we'll prove that to you. So I said, well, I'll tell you what I can do. I've got a poster of me fighting an election campaign around that time. I can send you the poster. So emailed him the poster the next day, got back to me, said, I've got to take you seriously. So I said, okay, he said, test question then, when was this taken? He said, if that's you, you'll know it. I said, well, the fact is I don't know, because I don't remember being there, but I know because of my glasses and the tie I'm wearing, that's going to be 1996. And he said to me, oh, close enough, we've got this down as 1997. He said, right, I'm going to have to investigate this. Okay, 3 days go by. He then writes to me and says, the photograph was taken in Texas. Right? Texas. By a Jewish photographer. I'm Jewish, by the way. And I said, oh, I've never been to Texas. So I said, you're telling me then, that's not me in that motor car. And his exact words to me were, oh no, Mr. Parks, I'm not saying that's not you. But the name that I've got for this person is not your name. So I said, what are you going to do about it? He said, absolutely nothing, because English law doesn't touch us. And that was the end of the conversation. So I thought, right, well, I'm going to get the newspapers to phone them because I want the newspapers giving them a hard time. So I went to my local newspaper wondering if A, they would cover the story, and B, would they put it on, I don't know, page 3 or page 4. You know what they did? They put it on the front page, and this is before I was elected, okay? Front page, and they did. They phoned up the company in Seattle, and they were just told, no comment, no comment, no comment. Now, the editor of the Whitby Gazette phoned me and said, look, he said, I've researched you, and he said, you're genuine. He said, when somebody gives me no comment, I know they're lying. He said, do you want me to make this national? Because I can. And I said, no, because there's security elements to this. And he said, yeah, you're probably right, but if you change your mind, let me know. So I went back, phoned again to the card factory managing director. And I said, I'm really not happy about this. I said, I'm not a greedy person. But you know what? You could have paid me royalties for my picture on those cards. How many cards did you print? Now, he didn't need to go and check anywhere. He had all this information in front of him. Immediately he came back and he said, I said to him, I've bought 7. Because my solicitor had said, go into the shop and buy them all out quickly. And I remember thinking, oh my God, supposing there are hundreds of them at £1.39 a shot, this is going to cost me a fortune. So I bought 7, that's what's left. And I said to the girl, what have you got in the store? She went in the store and I said, there isn't any more. And I thought, oh my God, I've got 7. How many hundreds have gone out there? So I said to the guy, I've got 7. And he said to me, oh, you've bought our entire stock. I said, you only printed 7. And he said, yeah, he said it was a test run to see if it sold well. I said, well, I'm not happy about it. He said, well, we've pulled it anyway. We're not going to print anymore because it was just a test run. I said, how can you possibly know how well a product sells if you only print 7 cards? And his answer to me was, I'm just the managing director. So then I said to him, okay, and these 7 cards with my picture on, of all your stores in England, which stores did you send them to? And he said, just one store, your store. I said, right, let's get this straight. You printed 7 cards with my picture on it, and you sent them to the store where I live. And he said, that's right, it's a small world, isn't it? And then he said, I have to go because I'm a very busy man. So what can we make of this? Clearly, there wasn't a teddy bear there. Something's been airbrushed out. I have no recollection. The car's been identified as a Phantom 4 Rolls-Royce. It's not Texas, because if you look in the picture, I've had the tree identified. It's a Northern Hemisphere tree. And what I need now is an engineer who's built flyovers, because they could look at the back, there's a flyover in the back of that picture, and I bet you an engineer could say from the construction of that flyover which country that was. It's not Texas. So I have no memory of that. Somebody has got a picture of me. That's not someone taking a picture through the window. That's a hidden camera. That's taken down from low here. Let's think back to this drawing. Oh, sorry. Think back to the drawing of the creature saying, would you like to be like us? Not, would you like to become us? Would you like to be like us? Supposing it was possible to take a soul out of a human being, place it into an alien being, take the alien soul out and place it into the human being, a sort of an exchange. How interesting, because then that human body could go around and have all the meetings it wants. Nobody would be any the wiser. It would be no problem because it's a human being. And then that human soul would be in an alien body and do an exchange visit and see what life was like from them. That's what it means when it says, would you like to be like us? Heavy stuff, not the sort of stuff you read. So here's a drawing. Imagine that was the case. Here's a drawing of a craft. This is a craft. I call it timeline interception because that's what they call it. If a person's going to be abducted, you know, you don't just turn up and hang about up in space thinking, oh, is Charlie Boy coming out now? It's project management to the nth degree. You have to exactly know where you're going to be, at what time, so many milliseconds past, what have you. You can't just turn up and hope for the best. People who say, oh, I saw a UFO the other day. You were meant to see it. UFOs operate in the infrared spectrum because your human eyes don't see an infrared. That's why when NASA sent all its spacecraft up, they had infrared cameras pointed at the Earth. So if it decloaks, for want of a better word, either A, their machinery is broken down, B, they've forgotten to switch it on, or C, much more likely, you're meant to see it. So here's a nice drawing I've done. The guys on the front are flying the craft. The guys on the left are processing information that is coming up from that control console from the floor below. The interesting green guy with the medal around his neck, I've drawn him incorrectly actually. His hands should be on the left shoulders of both the entities. Mantids, that creatures, the researchers refer to them as mantid. In America, they're called mantis. Willingly have agreed to be chipped by the reptilians, and they carry a chip in their left shoulder. Reptilians are fantastic at microsurgery. And if you place your hand on a living organism that's connected through the chip, you can receive information. Doesn't sound so crazy if you think back to that BT statement in 1995 about putting a chip by your eye so that you can record everything. Doesn't sound so crazy now, does it? And this is the floor below it. The guys, calling them guys, these guys sitting on chairs are doing everything in this quadrant. The one, two, three standing are doing everything in this quadrant. And these two are coordinating all the information coming from here, and then they send that up to what you just saw at the top. And this is purely and simply calculating when to appear, when to interact, when to abduct someone, we use the word abduction, to avoid detection, possibly also listening into communications from Earth governments. This could be a lens flare, but even if it is a lens flare, it looks exactly like a non-metallic orb. Has anybody seen anything like that before? Oh, brilliant, Dave. Well, does anybody think, hazard a guess what that might be? Anybody? Yeah?
Paranormal side of things,
they
tend to sort of say spiritual energy and
something. That'll do. Imagine that you are an entity living in the fourth dimension and you wish to come into the third dimension. This is a much heavier, compressed dimension. If you're a fourth dimension entity and you send your consciousness through to the third dimension, it will be compressed into a circle. This is a consciousness. Someone's coming to spy on you. Doesn't mean it's a bad thing. They're coming to have a little look at you. A friend of mine on the internet put his pictures up. This is a very interesting picture. Lots of pictures show things which you don't see with the naked eye. Very interesting creature. I've removed his face, although it's on Facebook. He's pasted it on Facebook. I don't have the right to put his face up, but the creature's there. I want to show you a picture that I was sent a while ago now, which is a creature descending from an aeroplane at a United States Air Force base late at night. The camera's taken picture at a great distance and enhanced. That's the one. It's coming down, whatever they call those things where they wheel the stairs out to the airplane. Now, detractors will say this is a weird fish, or it's a model. I was given the copy of this by a guy called Tony Kilvert, who runs a synchronicity website. It's from South America, and he paid quite a lot of money for this. They were afflicted by a djinn The drawings you've seen have been drawings of Jin in transdimension coming through from the in-between dimension to ours. And the story goes that the children have been attacked and that these guys, the adults, created a tripwire. Now, look at the man's face. That is not the face of someone who successfully caught